This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 28th of December, 1951. The title of this lecture is The Chart of Attitudes. This lecture is 63 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
All right, let's get this show on the road. People keep handing me these little notes, such as, does the control center on the right go to the control center on the left when the control center on top isn't on the bottom? Now, I want to tell you about that. These control centers are very interesting. Got a very reliable report on somebody up in Michigan, poor guy. Bunch of PhDs were working him, and I don't know what they did to him. They didn't do 15-act procedure. But they said, control centers. Ah. And right away, switched his control center. He thereupon started taking orders from his 3-year-old daughter. He was perfectly happy. He was cheerful. He'd been a PhD before this. All of his data was missing. And the only thing they were afraid of is they were afraid the 3-year-old daughter would tell him, quick like a bunny, to go out and jump under a truck or something. Because if she did, he would. Interesting, huh? Now, in other words, control centers can shift. There is actually a major control center for the other control center in an apathetic state toward it. When you shift a fellow's control centers along about the age of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, somewhere up along that level, life gets too rough for him. And they shift again at marriage, and, you know, they'll shift around. Guy changes his personality. He doesn't lose his data. Particularly, he comes up the line, and the first thing you know, he's sort of operating, his personality's different. Well, these control centers shift back and forth all the way up. Fact of the matter is, there are many, many control centers. There are probably hundreds of thousands of them. That's right. If you know anything about the theory of the epicenter, you'll see how a control center comes into being. The control center is just the organism taking the position of the new counter-effort. Every time you get through a failure, come up on the other side, you generally got a new epicenter. It's very simple. And actually, these are sub-posts. Every one of them is a sub-post, including the top control center. And this may all seem very confusing to you, but believe me, it's confusing to me too. Here you're looking at not an opinion, but you're looking at phenomena. This phenomena is discoverable. And you can trace down, for instance, the control center setup of the elbow, the right elbow. Where's the control center in the right elbow? Believe me, anytime you take a little kid and you're fooling around with him, you want to stick your fingers in between those two funny bones of the right elbow, you'll find the control center. Because every one of these control centers, a nerve, coordination, point, which is actually a new switchboard. Now we're talking physiologically at this point. Your control nerves come in to certain points in the body. For instance, one right there. Evidently, man got hit often enough there that he eventually had enough counter effort there that he had to take care of it structurally, and so you got a control center set up. Hit somebody there, he gets pretty sick. Actually, there are control centers there, there, and in each finger. It's no joke that a writer starts to write with his hands. He starts to think with his hands. You've seen some Japanese vaudeville artist write upside down with one line and backwards with another line simultaneously. He's just thrown a disconnect into the machinery, and he can think independently with this or this. Now, actually, you could probably carry forward not just one, but you could probably carry forward several thousand simultaneous trains of thought. This phenomenon is discoverable along this line. You start going back along the genetic control center line, and you'll find these control centers one by one graduating, each to a new control center. Somebody started this nonsense that the mind was in the head or something of the sort. That doesn't happen to be true. The mind isn't any place. That's the big joke. But there are all sorts of switchboards. And each one of these central switchboards has a contact on its own line of experience. And these evidently cross-feed data one to the other, until you get your summations and evaluations of data, and they sum up. Now, if you can ever reach it, there is a control center above all other control centers, and it's been there all the time. And probably when you got that one nicely established and so forth, you'd find out you could establish a higher one above it. There seemed to be an infinity of control center levels. But when you're dealing with a preclear, you're dealing with somebody generally who was on such a gross point of material universe that he's more or less running on the right side or the left side control centers. People who have strokes just have one control center go on strike. It kicks the bucket. Bang. It says, I don't want to go out and living anymore. And half of their body goes paralyzed, that sort of thing. Control center picks up an old facsimile in terrific protest and says to the other control center, I'm not in there pitching no more. And that's that. Interesting. I'm talking about phenomena. And this is just something which you will observe. Now, you've heard of a dentist. All of you, I imagine, have heard of dentists. The dentist has long held the idea that one tooth aches when another tooth aches. That is to say, there's a sympathy of toothache. Tooth A starts aching, and its mate starts aching. But there's nothing wrong with its mate. Nothing wrong with tooth B. It's tooth A thinks it has something wrong with it. That's fascinating. It's fascinating because it leads us off into the doggonedest process that you ever heard of. It's the internal sympathy process. Internal sympathy. Tooth B sees poor old tooth A going by the boards. And actually, tooth B gets sympathetic. And I mean that on an emotional level. He gets sympathetic. You want to run out somebody's toothache? Why, get the individual sympathy for that tooth, and that tooth's desire for sympathy for the individual, and you can actually get an emotional curve line out of it. You can actually get an emotional interchange amongst organs of the body. It's very interesting for you to know, because if you were able to do just this and nothing but this, you would have a well preclear. If you could get every organ of the body in full communication with every other organ of the body, if every part of the body was in communication with every other part of the body, if every control center or old epicenter was in contact with the rest of the epicenters, you'd have a well guy. You'd have a well guy. You just start getting somebody in contact with his liver, if he's got some bizarre pain in his liver, and you just get communication to the liver. Just that. And work on it for a while, and you're liable to turn up with an emotional situation between the individual eye, wherever it's located, and the liver. There's an internal interplay in the body. And why shouldn't there be? Because the body contains hundreds of thousands of colonial aggregations of cells, and each one of these joined up. Each one of these has its own genetic background. Each one of these has its own thought pattern, its own experience pattern. And they're in there pitching just as long as they figure out things are all right and the control center that should be in charge is in charge. All of a sudden, the fellow starts shifting around on control centers, wavering, gets beaten down into apathy, and he's no longer in charge of his own body. And when this happens, he goes down to 0-5, somewhere like that on the tone scale. You'll get the same interchange from one part of the body to the other that you get from one human being to the other. You actually have the proposition of an individual who feels so sorry for some part of his body that it is in continual trouble. actually a tooth. Every tooth in your head has a potential service facsimile which it will turn on to get sympathy. Now, that's a hell of a situation, isn't it? Very sorry to have to tell you about that, because it means that the human body is, after all, built out of the material universe. I don't think you'll ever take it up to static. I examined this engineering-wise. I found out that static is evidently a -273.4, whatever it is, degrees centigrade. That is the temperature of the static. It would have to be, you see, because that is the temperature of no motion. The static has no motion in it. So I put this into test. I set an individual down. I get him to concentrate on a state of not beingness. Now we're all set. He starts to get counter efforts, which he has not handled in the past, because he is slowing down, you see. He's sitting there motionless. He's sitting there relaxed. He's in a state of not beingness. He gets bow, bow. And you say, that's all right. Just calm down. Bow. And the next thing you know, he begins to chill. He starts to chill. Now, this is the sort of a rat race that a person can get into if he starts practicing very great concentration and an abandonment of the physical body. If he starts practicing this, this is all right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with practicing it. But he gets into this situation, he goes up the tone scale above 20 and starts to travel too slow. And when he gets way up at the top, well, if he can take his body through it, that's all right. But these cells don't stand up very well under a very quick freeze. It's cold. If you don't believe it, put it to test. Take you some months to get up to speed again. But if you want to put it to test, we did it to a couple of boys. And they're not quite right yet, but it's all right. Now, people in spiritualism, mysticism, have noticed that a great quietness, a lot of trancing, and so forth, eventually does something to somebody. Eventually does something to somebody. And that's evidently what it does. The practice of yogi. Understand, we're not talking now in terms of right or wrong, or whether it's right or wrong or otherwise to do this. You want to go out through the top? Okay, go. Use complete self-determinism. If you want to go out through the bottom, why, just keep taking in lots of sympathy and using your service facsimile, and it won't be long. Used to have a skipper. The crew was always threatening to mutiny against him. He said, this gangway is open to all parts of the world. Well, that tone scale sure is. Now, that tone scale is plotted from 0 to 40. 0 is stop, 40 is stop, actually. 20, theoretically, you get optimum motion. Now, the human being who is in a state of optimum motion probably doesn't exist. He's probably way down the line from that. If he gets up to 4, he is a heck of a lot further than normal. Well, he's got a long distance to go and a lot of speed to pick up between 4 and 20. You get the idea. So what it happens is that your tone scale is a circle. It starts at 0, and it goes on up through various strange manifestations, including normal. Goes on up to 4, starts getting up above 4, goes on up to 20. You got optimum motion there, theoretically, and then starts to slow down again through some interesting aspects. This chart, which you see here, has a plot across the top of an ideal state of being. But nowhere does this chart say where these ideal states occur above about 27. They're certainly above 27, but they're spotted anywhere between 27 and 40. Where each one is, I don't know. I just happen to know they're all there, empirically. So, it may be that some of these come in at various speeds. It is certain that there is a band between 38 and 40 which is as thoroughly insidious as the band between 0 and 2. It would be a rough deal if somebody got up in there. But yet they do this every once in a while over in India and so forth. Now, every once in a while, somebody who doesn't know what he's talking about says Dianetics has to do with mysticism. I don't wish to be blunt about it. I want to be courteous about the whole thing. But he sure doesn't know mysticism. Mysticism is a channel for discovery. It is not a subject. It is a process, you might say. It is a field of traffic through which one starts, continues, uses to discover what might be wholly true. It's an effort to discover that, but it's a channel, it's an activity. Dianetics is a subject. Dianetics is actually in bin 3. Well, we've talked about this before, but let's take 3 bins. Bin 1 Everything in bin 1 may or may not be known, but if anything in bin 1 can be experienced, felt, or measured by any process at all, by a human being or a life in any form, then it is knowable. Furthermore, here you have your bin of near absolute truths. Now, this is the mysterious, this is the unknown, but it is not the unknowable. The unknowable's over here someplace. That's where they buried Spencer. That's where they buried Kant. Hegel's buried down here. That's closer to hell. All right. So, there's bin one. Now, everything in bin one is potentially knowable one way or the other. But how do you find out about it? Well, we can call this bin two, but it's actually a series of tracks. A lot of tracks. There are a lot of them there. Religion's one of them. Mysticism's one of them. Magic is one of them. I mean, old time magic, which was a highly codified thing. Science is one of them. Science is a sort of a limited, and I do mean limited, methodology. Because science insists upon observation without inductive jumping to the conclusion, then trying to ride back on it. I mean, we've actually expanded in book one the definition and activity of the general scientist. It caused quite an activity at Bell Labs, by the way. At the time this was going further, several engineers over at Bell Labs were perfectly delighted to sit down and try to figure out what is this thing called scientific logic. The interesting thing was they came up with a brand new one, but it was a better one. I imagine everybody believes this has been science now for a long time. It's not true. Your scientist goes from enormous number of observations to what he considers to be a conclusion that is a super conclusion. No other conclusion can be made from this data but that conclusion. And that is the way science has worked. Now, they have actually evolved in the field of electronics and physics and so forth, a new level of activity. They call it mathematics. That's a swell new name for inductive logic. Mathematics, you take a lot of symbols, you throw them into a hat and scramble them up and you bring out an answer and you say it's absolutely true because it came from the field of mathematics. Oh, yeah. You ever read an income tax return? Now, the point is that then science joined to mathematics makes an inductive-deductive type of methodology by which you recover data. But what is it? It's one of these tracks in here. Well, there have been tracks in there for a long time. They've had them in India and Persia and China and all over the place. Men have been trying to recover data out of here and get it into here. And what's here? That's usable relative truths. And when you say relative, you put it in italics and underscore it. Usable relative truths. That's what we think we know. Now, Dianetics is at once a channel which is composited out of any usable channel into an outline method of exploration of one. And down in here, by the way, that quite bluntly contains anything that is workable, anything that is useful as a method of discovery. What are these methods? They've been a lot of things. Why? I don't care what they are. They practically anyone known has some part of this. It's a broad track through here. But don't think that there aren't other methods outside of Dianetics that can discover this up here. That would be a very limited scope. Undoubtedly, they exist, although Dianetics is a rather horrible thing of picking up his part of its channels, practices of hypnotism, mysticism, spiritualism, magic, science, mathematics, so on, anything and everything which man thought man knew, and looking it over and trying to get in here. And believe me, any one of those tracks is a valid effort, a valid channel of discovery. Now, as a result, we have in three, we have pinned down and located a very large number of phenomena about knowledge and about the human mind. There have been three. Now, where do you want to study Dianetics? Do you want to study it down here? Relative workable truths, which by their application can resolve a great many of the ills, aberrations, misunderstandings, and conflicts of men. Well, believe me, there's a lot of that pinned down here in Bin 3. You can take a cook's tour through the phenomena of Dianetics and leave somebody mighty shaken at the other end of that. Mighty shaken. There's about 200 new phenomena. You can show them. Now, that's this. But Dianetics still goes on as a channel. Only it's not quite narrow-minded. It decided that any way you could get anything out of Bin 1, travel on it, boy. Anybody that says Dianetics is mysticism is neither insulting mysticism nor Dianetics particularly. Because how do you think they got up high enough to get science, actually? But he's overlooking the fact that concrete, positive phenomena that are as real and as easy to locate and as invariable as you have to pick up that pitcher and pour it into one of those glasses in order to have a glass of water. Let's not be sloppy with our thinking on this. We got these phenomena. I don't care what else is discovered. Those phenomena will continue and remain. And that, by the way, is the science of physics. It's no better off than that. And as a matter of fact, we may at this moment be just a little bit better off than the science of physics. Because the science of physics, by our science of physics, is doing mathematics along in this line. C plus 30284 divided by 1 over infinity plus 6297 equals 1. Quantum mechanics. Of course, that's a very slap-happy rendition of quantum mechanics. But you ask this fellow, you say, hey, what are those odd numbers you got in there? We know what C is. That's the speed of light. That's 186,000 miles per second or whatever they decided the speed of light is lately. I don't know what the Physical Congress has passed as new legislation on what's the speed of light. But, so here you have the subject of nuclear physics being regulated by a mathematics which requires what we call bugger factors to balance. And you say, what are these things? Well, it doesn't balance unless you put them in. And you say, is this the way you're figuring out those tonic piles? And they say, yes. So we're better off than that. Our preclears don't explode. So here's three. So you've got two levels in Dianetics. Actually, they should be differentiated by two names. They should be. Up here, this channel should probably be called something like Scientology. New coined word. Probably should be. What is it? It's a root. Science, the study of science, or the study of truth, or the study of knowledge. Because it's the study of. It's not an etic, meaning science of. And here should be Dianetics. What we recover by this process, regardless of what we use to compose our Scientology, when we nail down these phenomena with 10-penny spikes, and we say, that's it. We have recovered data to the field of useful relative truth. It's useful relative truth. You can take an individual and you can do this and you can do that. You just don't take one individual and do this and do that. You can take all individuals and do this and do that. Of course, sometimes you have to do this to the individual before you can do this. But you'll find these phenomena go on from individual to individual. Well, it must be a pretty good track, this track of Scientology. Because it's sure been producing an awful lot of stuff. As a matter of fact, sometimes I think maybe you ought to get some concrete, kind of seal that channel off for a few minutes. But it's going so fast, actually, that it is resolving cases before you get a chance to resolve them with the old technique. It'll resolve them with a faster technique. So you're saving time anyhow. The codification of the axioms and logics made it possible, however, to lay out a form. Some of the things I'm going to talk to you about today are in the stage of workability, high workability. But what explanation is assigned to the phenomena belongs temporarily here, but is still in process. So you have the phenomena, and you have the technique of how you resolve it. And then you've got this wide open channel that tells you there's probably more to be learned. And there's a horrible, insidious fact about all this. This bin one never empties into here. Inexhaustible. Utterly inexhaustible. But it depends on the alertness, the ability to know of the individual how well he can use two and how much he can drag out for himself out of one. Because here's everything. Here's life eternal. Here's happiness. Here's masonry, the Catholic Church. All of these things have some basic truths behind them. Now, whether they've attained those truths or not, that's beside the point. There's answers, answers, answers. There's answers. Theoretically, there's answers to everything under the sun in bin one. Now, what I'm giving you here is the basic diagram of how I have been working in order to get into the field of useful relative truth enough data to resolve cases. Now, we can perform some miracles with this stuff, and I don't say now that a miracle has to be performed in every case as it comes along. The devil with that. Let's just say that it performs miracles. And I call to your attention that it's been an awfully long time since anybody was producing any assembly line miracles. Quite a while. That doesn't make neither thee nor me a citizen of Nazareth. But it certainly makes us interesting. Now, On this motion proposition, I can tell you what lies out in advance on this. It's fairly easy to figure. On motion, there's something on the motion line. There's some sort of a central governor that we're all running on. And if you just could somehow or other speed up, none of your engrams would bother you. There has something to do with the speed of running. There's something in there someplace. Very interesting. Unfortunately, it doesn't have anything to do with human memory. It's a gimmick. And you know, that's quite advanced, being able to take a 200-inch telescope and look ahead a little bit and see that there's an end of track. There's an answer up there someplace. Of course, the second you get there, there'll be another end of track visible by another 400-inch telescope. But the point is that I've been looking in advance toward this thing now for some months, and it doesn't seem to be very much closer, so we just might as well bow our heads and get to work on what we got. I'm not apologizing to you for not having discovered this. But it's certainly there. Certainly there. Because it has the same shape as every other discovery in evolution. A discovery in evolution is an interesting thing. It is first used to monkey with. I mean, just say, well, maybe happy, little thought. And the second somebody finds out something about it, they find out the black side of it. Somebody comes along and says, you shouldn't do this anymore, and picks it up and carries it on to a high degree of workability. Now, that's happened to gunpowder. That's happened to walls. Happened to atomic physics. Gunpowder was first used to make noise, you know, celebrations and so forth. And then somebody says, it'll kill people. And they started fixing it up. And later on, not too long ago, they said, you know, this stuff is handy in mining. They started to build dams and mines and use gunpowder all over the place. They're doing the same thing with atomic fission. They never learn by these cycles. It just seems to go by a cycle. So right now, this little discovery I'm talking about, which we will call the governor, for lack of better definition, the governor, whatever it is, we can use it on the black side. There are several of these little gimmicks that can be used on the black side today. You can have somebody sit down and you say, well, now just concentrate on not being. So I just sit there quietly and concentrate on not being. You can do this to anybody. And after he sat there for a little while, you begin to get your results. In spiritualism, they used to think these were idle spirits slapping people. People sit there in a state of not beingness or something of the sort, concentrating, waiting to hear something from the environment. And I don't say, by the way, there aren't such things as idle spirits. There's no reason to cut off these communication lines. Quite in addition to that, any more than I would cut off a communication line, spiritualism, medical doctoring, witch doctoring, any of these things, it doesn't matter. You want to keep those channels open. Don't close them just because you're mad. And the person sits there, and I have seen, way back when, I've seen a medium get a bruised cheek from a slap from an idle spirit. It's quite interesting. Jolt, you know, and then turn on the lights or something like that. Finger marks or something on the cheek. Boy, does that sell the suckers. Mm. But this was done in honest experimental endeavor to find out if there was anything there, and we got these finger marks. All right, bing. Not very long ago, I just had somebody sit down in a state of non-beingness, not knowing very well that such a thing as a counter-effort existed in a facsimile. Sit down in a state of not-beingness and get a black eye. Bow! Eyes swell up. And you can do that to people. Anybody you don't like? You just say, well, now I'm going to make you well and happy. You just sit down. Now, that demonstrates that we can slow down a governor. You're not dealing with a facsimile when you make a person do this. It's just a mechanical action. You take his messed body and it sits still, and you have persuaded him to slow his governor down. Well, how does he speed it up? That's what we want to know. The devil was slowing it down. He'll sit there, he'll get black and blue, he will get chilled and so forth, and he will go around for quite a little while, pretty wobbly. He has an awful time speeding up again. Now, what's the gimmick that lets him speed up again? And if you could evidently get this little gimmick that makes him speed up again, if you could find in yourself the state of beingness, how do you be? Well, if you could find that, why, all of these low-tone facsimiles wouldn't stand a chance, because you would merely reach out and assimilate every last counter-effort that you have that you haven't used in the past, and you would just promptly take them and use them, because they have a certain value. In other words, you could theoretically speed up above the level, and it's got something to do with motion. It's got something to do with speed. You go down below this level, and the facsimile counter-efforts, their rate of speed is greater than the rate of speed of the individual, and so they have force against the individual. How slow can you get? Dead. You see? It goes way down. Or how slow can you get? Out through the top. You could get that slow, where you just sort of step off in body. It'd be a pretty chilly business, I'm afraid. But here, by the way, your lads that practice this out in the Orient demonstrate evidently that there's a separation of the theta and mest as you go on up the line too high. And you get up to the top and it's completely separated. They don't seem to go through the top complete with body. They are not in good health. They just don't pay any attention to the fact that they're completely disintegrated. You never saw such detached, disinterested, spiritual, auristic people in your life. And they're fascinating. What they're doing is going out from the top. What the great American public does, the public of the rest of the world, is decay out through the bottom. It's practically the same thing, but one, the theta is self-determinedly separating from the mest. And the other way, the other route, is the mest is falling apart and kicking out the theta. It just depends on which is boss. The end result is no motion in the static. Now, there's the distinct possibility that the reason you go on living and dying and living and dying and genetic line keeps rolling and everything else is because people keep going out through the bottom. There may be some distinct difference between going out through the bottom and going out through the top. I'm talking now about phenomena. I'm not talking about anything else, because you've seen people decaying and going out through the bottom. Maybe, or you may not have seen somebody going out through the top, but if you wanted to go look, I could sure tell you where to look. They have enormous presence when they start going out through the top. Fascinating. Terrific volume to the atmosphere around these people. Oh, they're very wise, too. They're up there around, I know. And they really do. But, of course, they don't know and do anything about it. That's the difference. They are fully responsible. Your idea of full responsibility might be, well, I'm fully responsible, I'm going to do something about it. That's way down the tone scale. See, these boys are fully responsible. They really are, but they don't do anything about it. There's no action, in other words, as they start up. Well, I'm sorry if this leads any of you into the belief that we are investigating anything else but human beings and phenomena, because that's exactly what we are doing. In the past, it was customary to cut off and say verboten, bar sinister, mustn't touch, wrong fraternity, to numbers of lines of research. One of the principal reasons why we've made this much progress in Dianetics is because we just opened up all the channels. Just took the various blocks off and let it flow. Now somebody comes around and tells you, you know, Dianetics is really spiritualism. You look at him and say, I'll let you in on a little secret. It's not spiritualism. Not very much, anyway. It's actually ancient magic from 632 A.D. Persia. Of course, we wouldn't let many people know this. Oddly enough, it is also Carl Menninger. You see? I mean, don't let anybody get you into an argument on this basis, because it's just across the boards. I mean, sure, the discoveries of, pardon me while I snicker, of modern, excuse me while I laugh, psychiatry. Pardon me while I sneer. have been examined in this field. And they have definite negative value. You found out, just as I did, that human beings can't be electrocuted and made sane. Nor they can't be carved up and served for roast beef or scrambled brains on toast or something of the sort and be made sane. You got negative value, tremendous amount of experimentation. They've also demonstrated that the handling of drugs, shooting drugs into the body, doesn't work either. Of course, I must say they certainly took long enough on this subject, since the earliest known use of this technique that I know of, it was used and used quite a bit and abandoned by the practical Roman. It was abandoned by the Romans about 2,300 years ago. The Greeks were doing it with hellebore, convulsive shock. They broke people's spines and did interesting things to them, just like today. And the Romans came over and looked over the Asclepian methods and decided, well, we'll keep on praying to the goddess Phoebus. We're all set. Remember, the Roman was practical. He was an engineer. He built very good at roads, and he wouldn't listen to something that was highly impractical. I just don't see quite what's happened in this society. Same thing, it does not obtain. But by the way, these techniques have all been thoroughly investigated. Down in Ecuador, that I know of, many, many hundreds and maybe thousands, I don't know. I didn't ask the last guy I was talking to at the Explorers Club how old the last skull he found. But they evidently were curing insanity by brain operations amongst the ancient Incas. Only they had sense enough to know what they were doing. What they'd do, take some guy that had his head bashed in with a stone axe, something like that, and they would trepan and relieve the brain pressure. They didn't go in and try to cut out the medulla oblongata just to find out if the guy'd bleed or something. They had sense back there in those days, in other words. The Romans knocked off from shock therapy, and the Incas did no more than trepanning with the brain. Of course, we were getting pretty desperate. And as the middle of the 20th century approached, getting desperate to the point of doing almost anything, and they did. So, a little explanation on that, as well as some 1-5 remarks. See if any of those remarks were lower than 1-5. Now, I've given you this background not to supply you with idle chatter. That's the background of this chart. This chart is a very workable chart. This chart had two origins. One is the origin of derivation. It was derived from the axioms. That's its derivation from the axioms. Here it existed. Its other was empirical testing, trying to find out what the ideal conditions of well-being, health, and happiness are. What's an ideal condition for man? No matter if it isn't a practical condition, what's an ideal condition? So that we can get a gradient scale between survive and die. We can get a gradient scale between right and wrong. Now, we've known these things a long time. But what are the buttons? We keep looking for these buttons, and we find out that they lie on these gradient scales. We have an ideal state of being at the top, and we have along the bottom a state of being which may or may not be ideal according to your lights. Now, in between, we have gradient scales from each one to the other. These 12 buttons, maybe some more buttons someplace, but every time I find a new button, I say, yaha, new button, three cheers. And I find out it's just a rephrasing of one of these 12. So here's this chart. You say 27 to 40. Gives you an idea here, fully responsible. All right, fully responsible and, no, just fully responsible. A little bit lower than that to get motion out of it. It'd have to be, I'm fully responsible and I'll do something about it. And a little bit lower than that is, I'm fully responsible for everything but that. At that moment, you have selected a counter effort or counter thought or a counter emotion to give yourself some activity. You get the idea. At 20, a person has picked up an awful lot of things about which he can do things. He can have action. There is motion at 20. There's a great deal of motion at 20, but a person at 20 is able to align or misalign motion at will without getting it snarled up. He's very well in control of his motion. Way down the scale here, the motion is manhandling him. At 4, he's still being manhandled by motion. You see? But up here, he's being handling motion, but he would have to, in order to have any action whatsoever, he'd have to select something out. Move it out of his sphere of responsibility in order to make it better. Furthermore, he'd have to care whether or not it was better. Furthermore, he'd have to care whether he was anybody or would do anything to him or anything he had to make it better. Now, there's reasoning. In order to get motion, you've got to have action. You've got to have protagonist and antagonist. There's got to be counter effort and effort. You go up the scale from that point, and it all becomes effort. So what? There it is. Now, something may happen to upset this rather upsetting picture, and I hope it does. But looks, by the way, like that maybe is a whole new universe on the other side of that static. Well, that's a fascinating one. I was doing some work the other day on the possible number of spheres of action, and all of a sudden it turned out that there was an infinity of universes, and that time was three-dimensional. Oh, brother, you don't think this doesn't make randomity. I don't know what does. But it's interesting. Don't ever misinterpret me that when I say, well, now, I know everything there is to know in Bin 1. I'm going to let you guys in on it. I'm not a psychiatrist. Now, this chart, by the way, is an extrapolation from the first chart in the first book. The first chart in the first book has infinite survival at its top. It has a gradient geometric scale. You recall that first chart? Well, this is the first chart. Except, boy, is it different. It's different in that it's got more data on it. That's all it's got, more data. An ideal state of being. Here's an optimum motion band. And down here is what you're trying to cure. Now, if you were to take these buttons and apply them to each and every dynamic, and don't do anything but that. Just take these buttons and apply them each one to each dynamic. You figure it out all the way along the line, you got very close to every possible combination of the things that could be wrong with a case. You see how that'd be? So this chart's quite a chart. It's nothing more than the first chart refined by empirical observation as done by the second chart in Science of Survival, and then computation from there, from the axioms, in order to derive at the chronic attitudes. Now, nobody says this chart is finished. But where it is not finished is in how many attitudes there are derivable from here to here, and how many things fall within this. Now, the first thing that you should know about this chart is that it is a prediction chart, in that it will predict what a person's attitude will be when you give him something on one of these buttons. The next thing it is a character index chart, by which you can take this chart and spot the individual on it and then look for his behavior on the Science of Survival chart, because this chart will analyze where the individual is much more rapidly than the Science of Survival chart. You probably had trouble with that chart. I know I have. But this chart is necessary to it. So you look on this chart and you can spot a person's position more easily. And then you can go over into the Science of Survival chart and you'll find out what he's going to do in terms of behavior. But its foremost use is in processing, because it will tell you everything that underscore italics has to be hit in a case. Everything that must be hit in the case before you can be completely at ease about this individual being back to battery, up to 20. You got to run these things. Now, it doesn't take much running. It's very fascinating how much you can get on a case. You take this chart, a knowledge of life continuum, the life continuum theory, which I will take up in the second part of this lecture today. A knowledge of shame, regret, blame, the emotional curve. You wouldn't have to run any engrams. You actually wouldn't have to run any secondaries. Those secondaries would splash in your face. Now, that comes down to the important points today in this bin. In bin 3, data is always under new evaluation. Always under new evaluation. Don't ever think that it's otherwise. The second it stops being under evaluation, you have a stagnation that sets in, which is very unhealthy, just as too much motion sometimes. Too much change, too much reevaluation is also unhealthy. Now, let me go over that again with you. This chart, a knowledge of it, a knowledge of shame, regret, blame, the life continuum, the emotional curve will button up your cases. There is not a case in this room that will not resolve that way. I know. I've been monkeying with this. Now, there is a codified method of using those put out in that handbook for pre-clears that takes it up more or less consecutively the way it should be. But you as auditors had better know what there is to know about the basic theory here. And additionally, you must understand effort processing. That's in addition to those. You can resolve cases. When I say resolve cases, I mean make them wide open so that anything can be run on them by these first processes I announced. But if you're going to run everything on them that should be run, you've got to know effort processing. If you know those things, you can be like Isaac Walton's Compleat Angler. You can be the Compleat Auditor. You should know those things. Every once in a while, you see somebody around, and they're dabbing at a case, monkeying with it, so forth. Nothing's happening. There's only one reason nothing's happening, is they just aren't using up-to-date procedure, that's all. An auditor had to be awfully clever a year ago to get the computation on a case. You run shame, blame, and regret on a case. Just those. Guy's got a Vizio, make him run shame on it. Make him run regret on it. That's all. He's got this Vizio, and you just say, well, can you feel regret on it? Feel it a few times, right? Feel it again. Feel it again. Feel it again. Guy, well, this reminds me of the time I drowned all of my grandmother's kittens. My little brother was got sick with the measles, and I was on the other side, and they kicked me down, and my God, I'd forgotten all about that, and that's horrible, and that's why I'm in the shape I'm in today. Why, you're a clever auditor. Now, that's interesting that you can do that. As far as locating the engram necessary to resolve the case, file clerks are terrible sometimes to work with on getting this thing. They'll generally hand it up to you. But they generally give you the engram necessary to resolve the engram necessary to resolve the engram by old-time standard procedure, which exhausted the perceptics out of them so that they couldn't be restimulated. And that's perfectly fine. It's a perfectly good procedure to exhaust the perceptics out of the engram so the engram can't be restimulated anymore. The trouble is the perceptics are not always lying on top. Sometimes the effort is. You can ask today if you want a technique. Let me invent a few techniques for you. There'll be a lot of them coming in from the field. There are all the time. I'll invent a technique for you. Give us the engram necessary to resolve the case. What's the first phrase of this engram? Guy says so and so. All right. What's your effort to have that phrase? I just run him on effort through the rest of the engram. That's worthless technique number one. All right. Next one. Give us the engram necessary to resolve the case. Give us a flash. How do you feel emotionally? Guy tells you. All right. Re-experience that emotion. Go on, experience it. Experience it. The fellow says, well, I got a somatic. That's all right. Experience the emotion. Experience the emotion through it. The emotion changes. Well, all right, let it change. Experience the emotion. Where's the somatic? It's gone. Another technique. All right. Give us the engram necessary to resolve the case. When did you decide to use that, bud? Well, just then. I mean, when did you used to hand this thing out? Well, I don't even know what it is. Well, that's all right. What do you think it was? Just imagine how you would use this engram. Well, I would use it to get eggnogs. What am I saying? And you would say, well, when's the first time you decided to be sick so you could have an eggnog? He said, why, that's right. I used to decide. Isn't that funny? Engram's gone. Levels of processing. Any one of those would supplant old-time standard procedure. Any one of them. They're very valid. Because the fellow's holding on to it by thought, actually. But it can be separated from him and thrown away forevermore by running the emotion off of it, because that's how he holds it in. He can't get hold of it, get the emotion off of it. Good joke on him. Or he could run the effort out of it and he's got nothing left to get hold of. You see? So there's three levels you can hit this. That's the way you hit cases. But you talk about resolving cases and getting cases open, making cases run. This is certainly what you have to know. Now, don't be dilly-dally about using this. You got a lot of cases. Round, you haven't got much time. Just slug them up. Look them over. Scan a few buttons off of them. Straighten them up. You can take any case that you messed up and get them back to battery this way. Of course, I know there's nobody here ever messed up a case. You know the time that guy charged out of that fear engram you tried to get him into, that fear secondary? Well, you can get him out of it with this. You just figure out about what tone level he was in when he came out, and he's probably been saying you're responsible ever since. And that gives you continued control over that engram. Only he hasn't got control over it anymore because he said you were responsible for doing it. Now you get him to figure out that you were responsible and get him to run that feeling and then get him to run the feeling on the fear engram of who was responsible in it. It'll come back under his control. So he'll just park it under file 864B, 972A. Skip it. I mean, that's about the way it works. But don't underestimate, under any circumstances, a technique just because it isn't spectacular. You have to ask yourself and answer yourself truthfully the question, do I process people because I like to see them 4 feet off the couch? Do I process people because I like to embarrass the neighbors by their screaming? Or do I process people because I want them to be self-determined individuals? And if the last is the right answer, you go on processing it. If it isn't the right answer, you straight wire yourself with this chart until you can give them the right answer. All right.